Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody's got the fever. This is something we all know. Fever isn't such a new thing. Fever started long ago. Now,
good evening and welcome to Lenny Godfrey's Straight No Chaser. We have a wonderful guest this evening, and I know you say that every week, Lenny Godfrey, but all of my guests are wonderful. They are fabulous. But before we get to my guest host, I would like to do a little housekeeping. You know I do it every week, and it's not for those of you who tune in most of the time. Sometimes you don't tune in every week. You tune in every other week, and then you catch up. It's for those people who are tuning in for the first time. And so I want to tell them that you are listening to blogtalkradio.com/S as in Sam, F as in Fred, T as in Tom, H as in Harry, and the number 2. And the reason why that's important is that that last little part takes you directly to my site, the Lenny Godfrey Straight No Chaser site, and you are then have access to almost 40 episodes of what we've been doing since March. And you, if you want to hear this specific one, all you have to do is go to that combination of letters and then get on the site. And Alexis, it says An Evening with Alexis Reyes, and you'll be able to hear it from the beginning to the end. The other thing that I want to tell new people is that if you want to do it tonight or if you want to do it at another time when you hear this broadcast, you can call in at 516-453-6063. And when you want to talk to either myself or the guest host, then you just press 1 for a question or a comment to say hello. Now, with all of that out of the way, I want to thank everyone for coming back over and over and over again. All my friends from the East Coast, those people who listen in California, in Texas, there are a couple of people who I know are in China, and I thank you so much for tuning in. I don't know what time it is there, and my friends in London. Thank you so very, very much. And all my New York friends, all my New Jersey friends, all my Texas friends, everyone, thank you for always coming and supporting us. And we're going to have a great, great show tonight because the person that I'm going to introduce you to, I have known for quite a bit of time. I have known this wonderful person since the beginning of my career, toward the beginning, where I toured the country with a company called Voices Incorporated. And in that company of actors who sang and danced, and we did a lot of a cappella work, was a wonderful, wonderful tenor-voiced person who was absolutely the sweetest man you will ever, ever come in contact with. And his name is Alexis Reyes. Now, Alexis is a fabulous singer, wonderful performer, but also what we have tonight is a person who is a magnet, I believe, in the hospitality field because he's now utilized all of the talent that he acquired while being a performer and he's put it into his hospitality career. But before he did that, he toured with Voices Incorporated and he was with the Puerto Rican Traveling Theater, INTAR, the Alliance of Latin Arts, and he was the founding, one of the founding fathers of the New Eurekan. I knew I wasn't going to get it right. New Eurekan Poets Cafe. And he's going to tell us more about that. He is now presently the general manager emeritus of the Brooklyn Diner. We all know that on West 57th Street, you go in there and it just has such an atmosphere of show business. And all of us who are in show business, we all go in there and look for our names that we've gotten on the booths and everything. And that was attributed to my lovely Alexis. And with that, I'd like you to say hello to my Alexis Reyes. Hello, Alexis.
Hey, good evening. How are you?
I'm absolutely wonderful and absolutely thrilled that you are here. You are so busy, and I thank you so very much for taking the time to really come in and talk to me and share some of the stories that people will be able to appreciate, those of us who've been in the arts for a while, to see how your life does morph into a lot of different ways. And I will say, I want to hear about the New Eurekan Poets Cafe later on in this show. So don't let me forget about that, because I really do want to. But I want to start at the very beginning. I want to ask you, when was it that you first realized that you had a beautiful voice, a musical talent? Not that you wanted to share with anybody, but that you just realized that you could sing. Do you remember when that was, Alexis?
Wow. I would have to say, when I was five. I know that sounds
really
odd.
No, it doesn't.
Yeah, because people would listen and stop and be quiet, and they would listen. And I found it, I was taken aback by it. I've never thought that I had an amazing voice or an incredible voice. I've always felt it was the delivery. And I think maybe to see a five-year-old have that kind of confidence, something actually that when, as you get older, you kind of lose that. And you lose it, and sometimes you listen more to the voice of doubt. But then all of a sudden you see that look, and you kind of say, they're looking at me that way. They're listening to me. What is it that they're hearing that I don't hear? Because, you know, sometimes you just sing, especially at that time and as a child, just for the joy of making sound and singing. And eventually you sing to touch somebody's heart, you know, so that comes through sound and words, but sometimes not through words, as we know. Sometimes, you know, like getting something or humming something or even not completing a note could make somebody feel something, or that break in your voice could make somebody feel something. So you get that later.
Were there any musical people in your family?
Oh well, you know, I come from a really big family, and I would have to say colorful.
All righty.
Very, very colorful, and there's one business they weren't in, let's just say. And even though, I mean, my sisters could really sing, and my dad was very, very, very colorful, and my mom, who's still with us today, she's 93. I mean, she's high drama, but a very wise woman.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I mean, I really, really feel I got a lot from my mom and dad, and from what I saw happen as a child with my aunts and uncles. And so it was really like easy to create a character. Like if there was a song that I really had no real, as a young person say, singing, because I didn't have the life experience to really bring anything to it, turn into them. If I wanted to, you know what I mean?
Okay. Yes.
Yeah. It's like kind of the way Strasberg talks about and Adler talks about, you know, how you can't really have every single experience, but being blessed with a large family and having very colorful characters in my family, when you read something or a script and you say, that's Uncle so-and-so, or that's Titi so-and-so, or that's my cousin who's in prison, you kind of said to yourself, wait a minute, I know what this, I think I can do this, and if I have any questions, I can ask them.
Yeah, well, you know, I think, you know, you're talking about the method of acting and how we can experience everything, but because we are, I think at an early age, you became an observer also. You know, the key, I think, to a lot of the success that some people have in our business is that they observe very acutely and they adapt those characteristics into their work, and they can relate it to specific people. Like they said, well, no, I was just playing my Uncle Jeffrey. And because it's so close to you, when a situation in the script comes up, you kind of know exactly how that character will react. And that's a derivative of some of the method acting that is taught in the studios. And sometimes it just, to simplify it, to make it very, and as a child, to be able to jump into it, that's absolutely incredible that you had that advantage that early on. What between that and voices, what did you do? What were a lot of the experiences that you had with voice? Did you sing in the church? Did you sing in choirs?
Oh, absolutely. No. That's absolutely. If I wasn't even a part of the church, I'd go and become a part of the church. So specifically so I could sing in the choir.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I didn't say that. No, I didn't say that. You know, it was like, where did he come from? Well, he's lost. And you know, people helped you out because you're a kid. And we've got to help this kid. And I would do things like that. I would go, you know, even like, because, I mean, you know, like, you know, the gospel choirs, they traveled in buses. And it's mm-hmm. like, if you attended the services, they, you know, I mean, my mother's Catholic and my father's was more from a Protestant background. So I was exposed to everything. And then, you know, culturally, you know, I'm Puerto Rican. So, I mean, I was very exposed to Yoruba and stuff like that. But, I mean, mm-hmm. in terms of music, anywhere where I could make a sound, even, you know, in some of the Yoruba ceremonies, I would be holding on and maybe playing a rhythm instrument while they're doing something so I could hear the sounds because they were different from what I heard mm-hmm. in my home. Mm-hmm. And the same thing with going on that bus where I said, you know, I'd be a member and they wouldn't see me maybe at the, you know, or I'd go to 9 o'clock mass. That was the Spanish mass always wherever we went, wherever we moved, it didn't matter. And then mm-hmm. after that, I would find places. My brother would sing doo-wop on the street. And then I would find some place where I would go, whether it be, you know, a storefront church or a formal gospel church, and just make myself a member. I don't think necessarily anybody was going to nobody turned me away. Although my specific thing was actually, I wanted to sing with whoever was there, and I wanted mm-hmm. to learn that music because it's what I knew other than the radio.
Mhm. Mhm. Well, how did that morph into your auditioning for voices? I mean, how did you come to think about voices as an entree for performance? Voices Incorporated. You know, everyone should know. Let me explain. Voices Incorporated was and is, well, I believe it's still in existence, maybe not touring as much as it did, but a wonderful touring company and a wonderful training ground for a lot of performers of different diversity, different backgrounds. But we would do the Harlem Heyday, which was the history of music in the Harlem Renaissance. We do an a cappella from Africa to slavery and then monologues. So it was a wonderful training ground, and we did them. I studied with them. I did that all over the country for about a year and a half. And so it was wonderful to train, you know, and you did it in the evening, and then sometimes you had early class performances. So you were up vocalizing at 6 o'clock in the morning so that you could,
hit
those, you know, those a cappella notes that were required in the slave songs because they were all a representative of what the language was there, a language of captivity and a language of planning for freedom, writing, and all of those kinds of things. So I just want people to know the value of Voices Incorporated, and a lot of people travel through there, and it was a wonderful experience for me. Jesse DeVore and Joe and all of them were fabulous, and they would engage us to a lot of the sororities and fraternities all across the country, which welcomed us so beautifully. So now, saying that so that everyone knows what Voices is, what made you think about, you know, going and in auditioning for something like that?
There was someone, you go to all the auditions and you kind of collect your no's. You know, somebody told me, before you get a yes, you got to collect all your no's. Everybody that says no, you know. So they mentioned Voices. They mentioned what it was. They mentioned Harlem Heyday and the music, which I really became a fan of after my first. I was part of an organization called Aspira, and Aspira prepared a lot of Latinos for college and different things, and also we learned our own history from them because you didn't learn it in school. And I heard mention of Voices in there as well, you know, and they said, oh, it's all this great music, and it's Fats Waller, and it's Hubie Blake. You know, it's Ellington, this company, all that stuff. And I said, hey, why not? And they mentioned Harlem Heyday, and they mentioned Journey into Blackness.
That's right, Journey into Blackness. That was the a cappella. Woo!
Exactly. That was where you really had to use your a cappella chops.
Exactly.
Which at the time, I thought I had until I actually got there and I said, step it up.
Did you work with Bernice Robinson? Did you work with Bernice?
Oh, my goodness, yes.
Oh, my God. Yes. I mean, I know she's she's still with us today, but I don't know if she is. Bernice was absolutely the most incredible soprano in the world who could get up singing high C.
My God.
Yes,
and,
I know.
Who was the – it was Bernice Robinson, and then I'm trying to remember who was the one – was you. Never mind.
I was mentored by Bernice, and so therefore I would duplicate the way that she would warm up. It helped me so much in my theatrical career. She had so many wonderful stories to talk about. I believe the man who created the theme song for Rocky, she had worked with. And she was just an incredibly gracious and generous woman and had been with them for years. And so everyone, you just sat and you listened to the stories of all the Melba Moores, everybody who had come through there, you know, before us. The ability to hear those songs, Ball in the Jack, all those things, I would go home with my parents and tell them I'm doing this song, and they go, oh, I danced to that song. I mean, they were so impressed that I was learning songs that were their heyday. But, you know, my parents were not going to let me go out on the road. Jesse had to come to my parents' home and sit down and explain to them where we were going and what was going on, because my father was not letting me go. He said, I don't know these people. You know, I don't know. You, they got to come here and tell me something. And
that
when
was
he,
a very
he finished, though, I went out on the road all over the country and eventually became the dance captain, voice captain of the board. But it was such a wonderful experience. Now, so I cut you off.
Who
and I want
to have to ask you something. Who was the acting teacher? She had a brownstone in Brooklyn, and she really drilled us.
Oh. Okay,
But she's like an icon. She's an icon. I mean, she.
Yeah, I know.
She remembered Catherine Dunham. She remembered Catherine Dunham
in the Blacks.
And Savilla Ford.
She was in the Blacks.
Yes. She was in that with Cecily Tyson. I mean, that she was part of that.
Yes.
The original
cast. You know. Yes. She was in. She was in that company. We'll think of it. Just. Tell me what were your experiences there, and how did that eventually help you to move on to where you moved on to? Yeah.
Well, it kind of embodied a feeling of not giving up and not being defeated.
Mm-hmm,
you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not saying then I learned that, but I think that was the beginning for me,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Where you kind of like really realize that some of your failures, or what appear to be failures, are what really make you who and what you are. And I'm really hoping I don't sound cliche, because I mean this seriously from the bottom of my heart. I think that every single experience and every single time when you heard the voice that said, you can't do this, you can't bring anything to this. Also, like the very idea of just getting on a bus and being with people you don't know at that age is like you've got to develop relationships where it's really, really outside of your family, and where you really take care of each other and have each other's back, and you respond to each other in a way where you feel like you're pieces of each other. You're like one piece of a big thing.
Yeah. But before you go on, I looked it up. Cynthia Belgrave is who you're talking about.
Yes, Miss Belgrave.
Yes.
Miss
Belgrave. Yes.
Like,
Miss Belgrave. Cynthia Belgrave.
I'm so glad
she was in the original. Yes, she was in the company with Godfrey Cambridge and Roscoe Lee Brown, Ethel Ayler, yes. Maya Angelou, Charles Gordon, and Louis Gossett. She was in that original company. That they did it in 61, and that then James Earl Jones and Cecily Tyson
and
had been in.
She was the dramatic coach
of voices. Yes, she was. She was wonderful, Cynthia Belgrave. Wonderful, brilliant, wonderful actress.
She helped me realize that every song is one piece. But
mm-hmm.
it's the same thing with the things you do in life. You take that right over. It's like, you know, your day-by-day thing, your daily life, that's one piece that you have to start your day where it's like, you know, wherever you started, you have to bring it to the point. Sometimes you wake up and you feel like you can't be defeated. But sometimes,
mm-hmm.
no matter how much of coffee you have, you will continue to be defeated.
Exactly.
I mean, these lessons, it's your life experience. It's the experiences
mm-hmm,
you
mm-hmm.
have and how you respond to them. And
mm-hmm.
people like her, with all the pain and different things that she went through, which she didn't necessarily bring that to the table, but you knew, and she was able to bring out a performance in a song, a delivery, where you looked at the lyric differently. But you can do that. You could use those same skills in your daily life, actually, and how you approach
made
them, what you hear.
Made it elementary that it was the transition between reality and being the characterization was seamless.
Yes.
She passed away in 97, I think.
Yes.
She was absolutely most gracious, soft-spoken woman. Very soft-spoken,
yes.
You know. I believe from the Caribbean. I'm not sure, but I believe from the Caribbean. And she just was a delight to study under, you know. She was wonderful, just wonderful. That whole company had a history of wonderful people going through it that were very, 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 very talented. Sheila Davis, who went on to create her own theater in New York City. Yes. So, I mean, these people are, you know, it was a wonderful training ground for a lot of people. And, you know, we are very blessed to have been a part of that. What I want to make sure that we get to, because, you know, now I'm going to say this and you're not going to believe it, but we have less than a half hour left. See, so I have to get you some voices all the way to the Brooklyn Diner here in less than a half hour. But, you know, but the journey is so wonderful that how the path, you know, takes you. And that's why everyone says the journey is even more important than eventually the destination, because it's all that you learn through the journey. But now, all right, so you've gone through the voices. How long did you stay? Because I know we worked together, and then I went on. I left and had to go off on the road. How long did you stay with them?
I may have worked with them, I would say, 3 to 4 years.
Okay.
Believe it or not.
Mm-hmm. Now, after...
And with touring and everything else, it was like very, you know...
Yeah.
It was very fulfilling.
Yes. Now, after that period of time, what then happened with your thinking, and what were your decisions that took, what was the next move for you? What was the next move?
Well, you know, I went back to school for about a minute because I was trying to figure out what I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got into an experimental play from these, you know, there were these poets. There was Miguel Piñero, Lucky Cienfuegos, Miguel Algarín, and they were having all this poetry stuff, the revolution stuff going on the Lower East Side.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to, and very instrumental for me and my upbringing, Tato La Viera, who they were doing things like poetry and very experimental stuff. And Joe Papp was kind of involved in it because I kind of saw him all the time. And so we did a lot of experimental theater. It was like, it was on, I believe, on 6th Street at the time. It's now on 3rd Street, and they have another one in Puerto Rico. The founding fathers are gone. I wouldn't necessarily say I was a founding father, but I was part of that movement in the beginning, and I was an act they always used. So they used me because I could do several things. I could sing, I can dance, but they used me in a more experimental way. Like, it wasn't classical dancing or anything that would be, it was more experimental. And even the vocals, you know, I mean, just making certain sounds and making certain sounds with other vocalists. It was like, it was different. It's a very, very special part of my life that was part of my development as to anything that's possible in how you convey a message, you know. And really, it's like, you know, I did a lot of things with them in and out for a lot of years. I think, like, the Puerto Rican Traveling Theater, for example, was more, it might have been new productions and even INTAR, but they were basically more structured in a way that one would expect a play to go, or
more traditional. So you're saying they were more traditional,
right. Mm-hmm. It was structured more like that. And in with the New Eurekan poets, it was like kind of anything goes, and they were trying to break boundaries and trying to like get that crossover feeling of hey. Why can't we get a New York musical? Why can't we get a Latino musical? Which they did happen. They did exist. I mean, I was in them.
You know? Well, that brings us, just a quick thought, that brings us all the way up now to the Latino musicals that are becoming more popular. Now, what do you think of those as opposed, did they benefit from the Puerto Rican Traveling Theater or the new Eurekan Poets Cafe? When we think about the films and the theater that has been presented on Broadway, what is it? I'm talking about now, how come I can't think of the
Heights,
name?
You mean like the
Heights in the
you're
Heights,
talking
yes.
about?
In the Heights. Yes, in the Heights.
I think everything everything that we did, even though it wasn't like in the age of what we live in now, media,
mm-hmm.
that the real media age is now. Even though you don't see it, the word of mouth history, like the things that you and I were just conversing about, that people may not know, but we remember, we knew that these people, we didn't necessarily know at that time that the people that were mentoring us were icons. I look
right.
them up now and I
yes,
see they
and
are.
See. Oh my goodness.
I think that,
you know.
yeah. I think that history, we paved the way so they're able to do that. They're able
yes.
to experience the diverse field we broke down. I really
yes.
feel that the setbacks we suffered opened the way for them to be able to do the things they did. They are doing
when
right
you
now.
Setbacks,
did,
tell me
right
kind
now.
Of what you mean when you say setbacks. Tell me kind of what you mean. What did you have to endure at that point in time in the theater that made it possible for something like In the Heights to be done in the theater and then in film? Mm-hmm.
Well, all the other things that we were like kind of pigeonholed into, where it's like,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
this is who we were. And I mean, In the Heights, you're telling your own story,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
And although, within my community at the time when I was growing up, West Side Story was heavily criticized. I have a special place in my heart for West Side Story. I defend it. I think it still opened doors. I think it's still, I mean, I think my elder brothers and sisters were not too thrilled with West Side Story. But on
mm-hmm.
the larger level, that broke barriers and it paved the way for In the Heights. Or even somebody, or us having such a diverse stage in Hamilton.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
mm-hmm.
just the mosaic of color and people of color and what they actually look like.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
mm-hmm.
that didn't exist. I mean, in our, I mean, for example, you mentioned the blacks. I kind of think it was the blacks. And the world is not just the blacks or the whites. It's in the younger generation, especially like my staff, they're educating me. They're experiencing a whole different world than that I knew.
Mm-hmm.
But when they
mm-hmm.
I talk to them, I realize, gee, I feel better because I think it's because of what we did.
Yes.
It's
yes.
because
you can see some of the results of some of the things that you did. Yes, yes. I feel that. I feel that. Yes.
Some of the things we swallowed and we said, mm-hmm. good move.
Yeah.
To open things up, this is going to close the door.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you, mm-hmm. there are certain decisions you got to make. I'm not proud of every decision I ever made, okay? But I am proud that I made them, that I moved in some direction. Intention, I think, is very important. The sense of cause and embracing the cause and why you're doing something. Sometimes you can
exactly.
be doing something for the greater good,
exactly.
but it
exactly.
creates the good. And sometimes you pull back and you're like eating yourself inside and you're saying, yeah, the greater good. But you pulled back and the greater good happened, even though
mm-hmm.
you wanted to say, it's got to happen this way. But
I don't think
that's the kind of control you want to exercise, you know, because I think as artists, we kind of feel we don't have, well, I can't remember the last time I said as artists.
Well, isn't that interesting? There you go. There you go.
I just got to stop.
Well, you know, because once an artist, always an artist.
You hear me say it.
Well, you know, I mean, but the thing about it is that there's always a thread. There's a connecting thread that allows progress to happen. And
yes.
sometimes those people who are in the midst of the progress have a feeling, they have this feeling that they are the ones who really created that. But they have to kind of realize that it is a part of a creation that was seeded decades before, and a lot of people, you know, were confronted with a lot of adversity, a lot of resistance, and persevered through that resistance, so that what we see today is a result of generations of work, not just the work that you did 2 years ago, or 5 years ago, or 7 years ago. It's a result of generations of 50 years ago. When people, because these people have been dealing with these issues forever. When you said earlier,
yes.
you know, you were really involved in the theater because you didn't learn your history in school. None of us did.
Uh-huh.
Of diversity. No, there was one kind of history that was taught. And then if you were taught your own individual history, you went to religious instruction, or you went to an additional school on Saturday to understand what your particular ethnic group, that background was. So now we're trying to reach a point in time so that the arts is in leadership of diversity, and that
yeah.
everyone's history is out there in the open and being taught all the time. And there's no prohibition of people saying, well, you know, only this kind of history, only this particular conversation can happen. I know that there's controversy, you know, with that happening in the schools, that there are a lot of people who only want one way to be taught, or they want to make sure that there are different conversations, and there should always be different conversations. But the point is that there should be conversations, not just one, you know. Now, I'm going to move this along because, as I've said, now we're less than, well, going toward 15 minutes. And I want to also let people know that I know we haven't gotten to him being at Brooklyn Donnie yet. We have a little bit more to go. But if you have any questions for Alexis, please go and dial in 516-453-6063 and press 1. We'd love to hear from you. If you just want to say hello, just press 1 and I will be able to see it, and I'll put you on the air and you can ask Alexis a question or just say hello. But now, Alexis, we are getting to the point where now you've been involved in the theater, but then there was an evolution that took you into the theater and then away from the theater into hospitality. And how did that happen? But you were still entertaining at the same time. So tell us about that. Maybe you want to tell us about 2020 or some of the other things. Just talk to us about how that fit into your world and has led to where you are now.
Well, I would say 2020, but before I even speak about that, I mean, I'm presently like with the Farm and Hospitality Group, and they've got Brooklyn Diner USA, the original where I work and help found the, I feel like a founding father because I was there. It's there 27 years and so am I, you know. But I found I was Shelley Fireman, who has the 8 restaurants. He has Bond 45, Trattoria del Arte, Fiorello's across from Lincoln Center, where is where I got my beginnings. I was a busser. I was a host. I was a dishwasher there. I left as a manager. It gave me the ability to actually, after being there 5-6 years, I was able to just like leave. And before I took another job, I actually traveled and that changed. Traveling changed my life because I saw that the world was totally different from where I lived. And so he's the same owner that actually owns the Brooklyn Diners, the ones that are on Times Square and the one where I am at 57th Street. And I would say I was at, like, he's very showbiz and very, very much an artist himself. And, I mean, he sculpts, he paints, and his just his whole way of thinking and his whole way of running the company is kind of that way.
Very artistic. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, kind of like I was in an audition. It wasn't an audition, but it appeared to be, it was like a cattle call or something. And I got really dressed with the best things. I looked at all the people there and I said, man, this is like everybody walked out of Vogue and GQ. And I said, I'm the shortest guy here and I am not going to be seen. Okay. But he came out of the crowd and he said, get that smiley guy over here and send everybody else home. And that's exactly what happened. It sounds like a made-up story, but it's not. That's exactly
wow.
what happened. He didn't talk to me again after that. He said that to his then general manager, who I think was Nico Stamulara, and he said, hire that kid. He can do something. Just figure it out. And I mean, everything else as it goes is history, but you know, I eventually always a person that was kind of like Walt Disney or something. It's like he came out of nowhere. It's like the things you read about. And that's how I got started in hospitality, actually. And I just like, I was like, I felt like I was a part of his dream. And to this day, I'm not really quite sure how that all fell into place. But, I mean, I'm here today, and this is a lot of years. I don't want to say a lot of years because he will come after me. But we need to
well, you know, but it sounds like,
I mean,
it sounds
I don't
like
care.
It's
but
a theatrical
I mean, I,
company. It sounds like it's a long-running theatrical company that you belong to.
This is
that
a
happens
show.
To happens to do happens to be in hospitality. So it sounds like artistic
exactly.
the artistic decisions are very much like the way that he runs his company, the way the theater is run, you know.
I mean, I kind of, even to the point where, I mean, there was no Food Channel when I got into this. By the time most of the things when I watched Food Channel, I said, oh, Shelley did that first, or this one did that first, or this, you know what I mean? The things that I was able to witness, he's kind of like, I think of that show, I see it sometimes, I like it very much, Unsung.
Uh-huh.
Unsung.
Yes. Yes.
So
yes.
I think I said we got to do the Unsung for the hospitality industry because he to me is like totally unsung. He's
mm-hmm.
totally unsung. I mean, it's mm-hmm. like I saw a very very famous chef walk into our restaurant after having an interview on the Food Channel, and then he was on The View, and he came in. And he took up 2 booths, and he was talking about, and when he saw my boss walk in, he said, that's Shelley Fireman.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, wow, I didn't realize, I can't say I didn't realize how iconic he was, but what I realized is that he's, him and a few other people that just come to mind, why there is a food channel, why there is a food industry, because of the way these people did certain things. But it's like the way you and I are talking about, or Cynthia Belgrave, you know,
yes.
These are people that is like, some people might say, who? I said, it wouldn't be any theater or any black theater or any black experience or any experience of diversification. Never mind black. I don't see why they, Cynthia doesn't take her place with
Adler
and Trump.
Well,
yeah.
With Stella Adler. Yeah. Yes, exactly.
I mean, when I think of somebody like, say, an Esperanza Spalding,
yes.
I think of her, mm-hmm. and I think of Miles Davis. I don't, and she's a young woman, and I said to myself, she is the Miles Davis of our time right now at
mm-hmm.
this particular
yes,
time.
Her generation.
I mean,
yes,
some
she is.
People who
mm-hmm.
really, yeah, some people. I know I'm going to, if anybody hears this, I'm going to get phone calls at 6 a.m. and say, we're talking about Miles now. You know what I mean? And I'm
yes,
saying,
yes.
I'm talking about Miles. I think he was a god. And he and Miles loved Prince, you know, for God's
yes.
sake. I said, Esperanza
yes.
is the Miles of our time. Yeah, I mean,
yes.
she's breaking barriers. I mean, I just recently heard some of her work and I just went, oh my gosh, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I know I went on a tangent, you know, from restaurants, but I think it's all interconnected. In it's the same way, like you want to create the presentation of a certain food item, or you
mm-hmm.
want to rearrange the thing. I mean, that's what's happening now with the research with veganism and vegetarianism. You know,
mm-hmm.
plant based
mm-hmm.
food. You know.
Yes. Yes. Yes, exactly. But, you know, I think the point of the conversation that we're having is how the arts have entered into every single phase
yes.
of everything
Absolutely.
That we do and how important it is. And I was at a seminar, a webinar the other day at Lehigh University, and we talked about how important it is to respect the importance of the arts from the very beginning, from K to 12, to
yes.
implement that, to make it a part of our lives, to make it so that it's not disposable. This is all what this is all about. I'm amazed when people come on and how I realize how you just, you know, explained to me that when I come now, the next time I go to any of the restaurants that you talked about, I will look at the theatrical presentation of how it is run because it is patterned almost after theater, which is why I think you so easily and seamlessly went from theater right into a different kinds of theater into hospitality. I think, you know. That's
I appreciate
how it's
what you're saying because I view it as my new stage. That's my new
yes.
platform of, you know, well, it's not at this stage. I mean, I'm going into the third stage here. But I'm saying it's a Russian play. It lasts 3 days, right? So
yes.
Let me not get started. But, like, yeah, absolutely. You have to look at it. It is the stage. It is the, I mean, I remember, who was it? I think... two people that stick out, Norma Jean Darden, who did this play where, you know, she's a great baker and a great caterer, and she started serving food.
Mm-hmm.
She started serving her food in the middle. I mean, this was like a circle in the square or something. And I thought to myself, who the hell would have thought of that? I mean, she was phenomenal. I mean, one of the original supermodels. And mm-hmm. I think it's Shirley Black Brown, who was like one of the first – like big deal iconic dancers, along with Judith Jameson, part of Alvin Ailey, the way she wrote
mm-hmm.
a book about plant-based food, and this was more than 30 years ago. that led her to be start becoming a little bit more pain-free, because she started, of course, we all lose certain abilities, started losing the ability to move in the way she wanted to. But I think that's what inspired her. I mean, I guess she would probably, if she's still with us, she'll probably call.
Shirley,
don't hurt me.
Very still. Yes, yes, she's really wonderful. Real wonderful woman, yes. Mm-hmm.
I mean,
yes.
People and still the contributions that they've made, you know, are not like, you know, these people, they inspire me, and I want to share these people. I share them with my staff and say, look at this woman, look at this, look at that, look at the, you know, and I'll use a woman to encourage a man. I don't care. It doesn't matter. None of that matters. What matters is that you're encouraged and you want to do more.
Yes.
Hello?
Exactly.
Oh.
Exactly. No, I totally agree. I totally agree with you. You know.
Oh, there you are.
can you hear me? You can hear me now? Yes.
I can hear you. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, one of the things before we wind this down, and we're about to wind it down because we're into the last about 3 or 4 minutes of it, believe it or not, I told you it went fast. It goes.
Well, I can't believe it.
Yes.
I can't believe
yes.
A lot of the stuff I said. I didn't expect to say as much as I said. So.
Well, you know, I mean, but it is we're talking about a conversation about the arts, and when you have a passion about the arts and you get in conversation about it, a lot of things come up. Things that we don't think about every single day. Things how the arts have really implemented and integrated into our lives, and how I organize my day is based on the discipline that I've, you know, acquired in this business as an artist.
Exactly.
As a person who started off, you know, you warm up in the morning and you know different warm up, whether it's physical and it's vocal or it's both, and you know, you do your day by that happens by a certain time, and then you start your business day by a certain time. Those kind of disciplines, the disciplines you get in the theater, the discipline you get when you've worked in an office, all of that, those things, though, the application of it is so important because it is really implemented when you are in the arts, when you have to apply it to the arts, whether you're going to the theater or not. The act of going to the theater, of getting there on time, of making sure that you're there before the curtain rises, that, you know, you do all the, you are a very gracious guest in the theater. All of those are good citizenship things that people don't attribute to the arts, but it is. It's how we conduct ourselves. You know, it really is. And you don't think about it until you start talking about it. And, you know, on purpose, I don't have a lot of conversation with my guest hosts. Because I don't want, you know, a lot of people when they have a conversation with people, they send a lot of questions, and the questions are, you know what you're going to talk about, and it's really quite wonderful. I have information in front of me that I wanted to ask you about, but we veered into something that was so spontaneous about the experiences that we had. And how visual it was, and how visual your journey has been. You know, I mean, one of the places that you worked that I found was absolutely, I'd been there a couple of times, and the destruction of it was just heartbreaking, was Windows of the World. And I wanted to talk to you about being there and being in 2020, all of those things. We have a couple of more minutes. You can say something about it quickly, or we can end up talking what we're talking about now and then say some more about it when we go on the after show afterthoughts, because we do have about a few more minutes there to talk about some of the journey that you've had. So it's up to you, Alexis. I give you the floor.
Let's go speak more after the break then.
Yes. We can, you know, after the break, we will pick up and talk about some of the other experiences that you had, the wonderful places that you've been, how you rose up the ladder, because you didn't start. You talked about when you worked at the restaurant Fiorello's. across from Lincoln Center and how you started. Was that when you started there, was it just to be to fill time in between gigs, or did you just decide you want
that was the intention, you know, that was the intention. And then I got really actually sucked into the experience of, you know, of the performance of everything. And what's the purpose of why am I doing all this stuff, and how everybody kind of seemed to work. The collaboration, it's like jazz, you know, it's like the collaboration. The collaboration is what, to me, I mean, that's what I walked away with from singing. It's like, it's all about collaboration. And I kind of stopped singing when I kind of started losing the collaboration. And then I felt I found it again in the hospitality industry. I found the collaboration there. You can't do that. You can't do any of this by yourself. You can't create that song. You can't deliver it. Or you can, but do you want to? And is it the message you want to get across? You know, I mean, Cynthia Belgrave said that one song is a whole theater piece. The one song. So I had to do that with the dishes on the menu. What is that saying to you? Is that reminding you of your first love? Or is that reminding you of a broken heart? Or is that reminding you of your mama or your papa?
Exactly.
That's where we go to chicken soup.
Exactly. Well, I'm going to end this right now, and hopefully people who are listening will then go to the after show after thoughts, because we're going to continue our conversation really there on this, and just a little bit more about your experiences in hospitality and how similar they are for the theater, and how the arts has really influenced both of these things in your life, and how interesting it is, because it's one of the things, presentation, when you do foods and everything, when you decorate, how the arts is similar in all of those kinds of entrees. So,
absolutely.
I will say thank you for coming on. This is just a temporary goodbye. Yeah, you're welcome. And I want to thank everyone for listening. It's just been absolutely a wonderful, wonderful conversation about the arts and a new area that we have you know, we're experiencing with. And next week we're going to have the Sandrees and her family, Lacey and Mariska, will be here. And that's a theater family that has grown up in the theater that I've known. So we'll see them next week. But now we're going to sign off from Lenny Godfrey Straight No Chaser, and we'll see you next week, and we'll see you in the after show afterthoughts. Thank you, Alexis.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Lenny. Thank you for having me. Thank you, everyone.
You're welcome.
This is something we all know. Fever isn't such a new thing. Fever started long ago. Never know how much I love you. You never know how much I care. When you put your arms around me, I get a feeling that's too hard to bear. You give me fever. When you kiss me, fever, when you hold me tight, fever, in the morning, fever all through the night.